in Shantek's eye line behind Gough.
The end of the flag. Court. The waving of a flag being distracted by. Right. Stop wafting the flag around. Juice. Serve down the tee. Oh, this net's getting involved.
Orly taught once more with her bag of shush. It's time to the flag.
Game point. Serve out wide, the backhand. Oh, it finds the court, the corner of the court. The raised fist to the skies from Iga Świątek, who is looking to get the job done here and now. Back to Juice, nearly 8 minutes in this game played in the second set.
Don't think Coco Gauff thought that was going to land in. Rather adds insult to injury here.
Served out, a good serve, but a knifing return. Cross-court winner on the angle from Gough that leaves Świątek standing. Another point to close out this game.
And that rather makes you wonder what might have been if Gough had, in particular, got that first serve in more often.
First serve is netted out wide. Second serve goes down the tee. Forehand snap back to the feet of Gough. It goes cross-court in the mid-court forehand. Another forehand from Gough going down the line to the backhand that floats and sits up, brought down backhand. Gough thought about coming in, but she steps back and she was kind of in no-man's land. She hadn't come forward enough. She hadn't retreated enough, so she overhits the forehand.
Almost all the clouds have receded from over centre court here, over court Philippe Chatrier.
That's good news. Juice. Serve down the tee, snap back to the feet, and the backhand is netted by Gough, and it is match point number two for the world number one and defending champion.
Well, the cloud that remains is a little cloud over Coco Gauff's head. It's coming up on the 1 hour and a half mark, 1 hour and 29 minutes.
First serve netted down the tee.
Those flagpoles sound like they're sending out a telex. Tap, 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 tap.
Doing their match report. Second serve down the tee. It's a soft one. The forehand comes back through the middle of the court. It's match point Świątek, who will miss wide with the forehand.
I hope they don't send it too soon, because Gough is still in there fighting.
The next semi-final, it's not before 5 o'clock, which is in around 21 minutes. You're not going to have too long a wait. Well, they bring out Mira Andreeva and Jasmine Paolini. Serve out wide. It's chopped back and it is wide. And Świątek stares up to her box. And it is game point Gough. Serve down the tee. The forehand snapped back through the middle. The forehand placed into the corner. Dropped over by Świątek. She knows she's beat. And the game is won. Gough will take heart from holding serve and saving two match points. Her box, the entirety of which are on their feet. But very shortly, the defending champion of the world, number one, will be serving for her place in Saturday's final. 5-4 with the break.
Gough just doing what she needs to do, goes point by point. get through that game. That's all she could do. Make Świątek serve for it. Ask the question. Kate has emailed in, says, listening to your commentary while watching the TV on mute from the sunny Algarve. Surprised by the seeming lack of fighting Coco today. Desperate for her to grit her teeth and fight back. It seems like the Coco of a few years ago, not since her US Open win. Do you think she was just too worked up going in? And also, given the tears early, she said, it's an honest emotion, but Kate feeling that Coco Gauff has just seemed to be perhaps a little bit mentally unprepared for this match. I don't think so. I think you have to remember who she's playing and the situation that she's playing in. I don't think she was overawed by playing in a Grand Slam semi-final, because she's done that a few times.
She did look nervous at the start of the match. She was trying to be aggressive.
Sometimes you work out the game plan and you get ready and you prepare and it just doesn't fire for you.
5-4 serving for her place in Sunday's final. Backhand for Świątek. Cross court, just shortened it a little bit. And she has 3 points from the win and 3 points from winning her 20th straight match at Roland Garros.
And the tears that we saw earlier when she had a little discussion with Aurélie Tore, I think they were tears of frustration as much as anything. I don't think she was emotionally overwhelmed by playing on court Philippe Chatrier. She is a big match player.
6th Grand Slam semi-final for Iga Świątek, looking for her 5th Grand Slam final, and she is 4-0 when it comes to the championship match. 5-4, 15 love. Serve into the centre of the box and the body, it's a mid-court return, and then a rare unforced error from Iga Świątek, lofting the forehand long when she'd got Gauff going the wrong way.
A little moment of weakness there. There haven't been many of those for Gauff to cling to.
Serve out wide, hooked back, deep. You heard the cry, Aurélie Tore, because the point it's at will scamper across the court. Just bring some clarity and confirmation. There we go. Gauff sees the finger pointed skywards. And Iga Świątek is 2 points from the win. First serve into the net, looking to go down the tee to try and get an error off the Gauff forehand. Hour and 34 on the match clock. Sun still shining down on Philippe Chatrier. Semi-final day. Your semi-final tomorrow afternoon will be Carlos Alcaraz and Yannick Sinner. And then not before 5:30. So that was not before 2:30. Not before 5:30. Casper Ruud against Sasha Zverev. Iga Świątek couldn't capitalise on the two match points on the Coco Gauff serve. Now has two on her own to get back into the Roland Garros final. 5-4, 40-15. Świątek winds herself up into the second serve at match point. Out wide she goes. Forehand thunders to the feet and she gets a short ball Gauff to work with. She goes backhand cross court. Cross court the backhand goes Świątek. Squash shot from Świątek. It will land long. That's another match point saved.
Gauff just turning to her team, clenching the fist. She hasn't given up the fight.
Fourth match point for Iga Świątek, the world number one. The second in the service game. Apologise, it's not happy with the ball toss as a pigeon flies over the court, casting a shadow on the clay. Świątek serves too deep. Cuts that ball away to the ball boy because she has another ball tucked inside the short to the left-hand side that she will use. trying to get it done. Fourth match point. Serve down the centre, the forehand through the middle of the court. Goff with her forehand crunches it long. And the arms are aloft from the world number one, Iga Świątek. It's taken her an hour and 37 minutes. A straight set, 6-2, 6-4 win. The only set she's dropped was to Naomi Osaka, where she was match point down. Since then, she has been ruthless. And she is back in the Roland Garros final. She has 20 matches unbeaten here. Her longest unbeaten run on clay is equaled with 18. She is the two-time defending champion. And she's through to her fifth Grand Slam finalist. Coco Gauff takes the applause from the crowd. She'll have to reset and go again in the doubles. Still very much fighting on in that with Katerina Siniaková. But the task was a tough one. The task was too much. And Iga Świątek is back in the Roland Garros final.
But not a surprising result given the head-to-head. Not a surprising result given how good Iga Świątek is this year. She's in her moment, isn't she? She's in her pomp right now, and particularly here at Roland Garros. Phenomenal stats and another incredibly impressive performance from the world number one. Perhaps a day to forget for Coco Gauff. Didn't serve quite well enough, didn't string enough good points together, but that's very easy to say. Much harder to deliver on when you're playing someone of Świątek's confidence, Świątek's ability, Świątek's attacking prowess. Gauff will have many other moments in the sun.
Really not a good matchup, though, is it?
It's not a good matchup, but that matchups can change. Coco Gauff is still emerging. I wonder if she might consider doing something radical with her serve like Sabalenka did. But right now, we're going to hear from Iga Świątek. She's going to be talking to Mats Wilander.
Merci beaucoup. Iga, congratulations. You're into yet another Roland Garros finals. It was very excited after you won that match. How does it feel?
Yeah, for sure it was intense. In the second set, kind of tight because we were breaking each other. But I'm happy that I just, you know, was consistent with my tactics and didn't overthink stuff and just went for it at the end.
Coco Gauff obviously is younger than you. You played her in a couple of years ago in the finals. A few words on what you think of Coco's progress as a player.
Well, I think she is progressing a lot, you know. You can see by her results, you know, last year's US Open for sure showed that she's tough. And yeah, well, I think at this age, you know, it's kind of obvious that she's going to just grow. So it's nice to see her, you know, handling well everything around her. And yeah, because it's not easy. So I'm sure we're going to have plenty more, you know, really intense matches on the highest level because Coco is, you know, also one of the consistent players out there. So yeah.
Good. Wish her good luck for sure. It seems Naomi Osaka in the second round, she had a match point. And you were maybe tired afterwards, but something changed after that or not? Because you've only lost 14 games in four matches.
Well, yeah, I don't know if...
Yeah.
For sure, you know, something changed. I would say I just adjusted better to the court. And, you know, it's not easy to play these first matches on a Grand Slam because the atmosphere is much different. Sorry, I'm hearing myself. Because the atmosphere is much different on other tournaments. And against Naomi, for sure, I didn't have time to kind of get into it. She just was intense from the beginning and put pressure on me. So I'm happy that I handled it well. And after that, you know, the weather changed also. So it helps my game, I feel. And I just gained confidence, I would say.
Mm, you definitely did. Definitely did. So you have a day off before your finals. Do you have certain things that you have done in the 3 years when you won Roland Garros? You do the same thing on Friday?
You know, for the first years we played here during COVID, so there wasn't much to do. We were in quarantine. I mean, not quarantine, but we were kind of, you know, staying in the hotel, not really going out. But now I'm trying to mix it up a little, because how long can you stay in, you know, the same routine? So, yeah, I'm doing, you know, a little bit more like socializing. And but overall, still, you know, I'm that kind of player that likes to stay in the bubble. So I want to balance it well. But for sure, I can adapt a little bit. Add a little bit more of that, because it's easier for me to like turn on and off in terms of the focus and, you know, thinking about tennis.
Well, you turned it on today, Iga. Thank you very much. Congratulations. Alice pour la finale, Iga Swiatek.
Radio Roland Garros.
Game, set, and match.
Radio Roland Garros will be with you from 3 p.m. local time, broadcasting live from Paris and bringing you ball-by-ball commentary, exclusive interviews and all the very latest news.
Live on radio.
Roland Garros.
Roland Garros.
The drive volley was brilliant technique.
She's great to watch. Fun to listen to afterwards as well, that bubbly personality. 40-30, Andreeva with her back to us. And that return was right on the line, but so is Andreeva's backhand down the line. That's a good way to close out your opening service game in the second set. She may feel just a little better after that as the sun disappears behind a cloud.
Yeah, there are not many clouds around, but it has found one. A message from Jill. I've been listening and enjoying your commentary since the beginning of the tournament, but...
Uh-oh.
I am very annoyed that you relentlessly refer to forehands as off forehands. There is no such term. I've been playing and teaching tennis for over 55 years, so my opinion is based on experience. Also, I'm watching the matches and play them back when you call a forehand is off. There's nothing off about it. Thank you for considering to find a more accurate term. I don't know where the term off forehand... I'm wondering if it's cricket,
well,
or the offside.
We had the very same question asked, like, what is an off forehand? And I said, yeah, well, if you go to cricket, you have, you know, you mid-off, you drive the ball through mid-off, that sort of thing. But... what was the name of the...
Joan.
What would Joan like us to call it instead?
Inside out, inside forehand,
out,
maybe?
Inside out, yeah, okay.
From the inside to out. She's not saying that, but it's possible.
Well, it's the same thing. There is an inside out forehand from Paolini. It's a winner.
There you go. There you go, Joan. If you've got a better term for it, we can start using it.
Yeah, but just don't confuse us.
Don't come up with something weird.
Like 15.
Wang forehand on me.
Oh dear. Or it's 15 love.
I wonder if it is from cricket though, because it does. You know, if you're a cricketer, when you're standing sideways on, if you're a right-hander, anything to your right is the offside.
Yeah.
Anything to your left is leg side.
Yeah. Or the onside. So.
Or the onside. Yeah. Off and on.
Yeah. Paolini, love one, 15 love. High kicking serve, and now. Slice, extravagant slice on the forehand from Andreeva, and perhaps partly because of that, Paolini is just a little confused, caught in two minds perhaps, and she nets.
Yeah, and you've got to remember, again, it's the first semi-final for both, and she's thinking, I'm a set-up, I'm quite close here.
Oh, don't think like that, Jasmine.
Exactly.
Stay in the present.
It's so difficult, though.
Put that little hoop around you, and then when the point's finished, jump out of it, and then jump back into it. It's one of the tricks they try. Backhand now to the forehand of Paolini. She mistimes that altogether, didn't really move her feet. Paolini knows, as Simon mentioned, that she is going to climb into the world's top 10, irrespective of what happens today. If she loses today, she will be at 10. If she makes the final, she climbs to 7. If she wins the final, she'll be 5 in the world.
Joan's got a fan off
forehand. Max Wadsworth, our statistician, the Earl of Barnes, as he likes to call himself. If he doesn't like it, we'll use it more. Shortish ball for Paolini to try and attack on her backhand side. She does just that. She's going to take another ball out of the air, and she's so, so good at doing that.
Definitely likes going cross-court with that drive volley. You're Andreeva, you might be starting to spot that. But it was good aggression in that point. And Andreeva on the back foot quite a lot. Lizzie asks, can the receiver get a time violation if they're holding up the server too long? It's a good question. They can certainly get told to hurry up. I don't know if they can actually get warned.
Well, that was a little bit the incident last night, of course, with Zverev getting very frustrated as the backhand from Mira Andreeva goes into the net, gives him more signs of frustration. Zverev got a time violation at one point in, was it the second set, I think, and then he became embroiled in quite a lengthy conversation with the umpire because he felt that Dimonor was not playing to his speed when he was serving.
Yeah, which is the general rule that you've got to play to the server's speed.
It turns long from Andreeva. It's another hole for Jasmine Paolini. It's one apiece in the second set. So, yeah, I guess if, as the returner, you are deliberately turning your back and taking too long, eventually the umpire's patience will snap.
Yeah, they can definitely warn them. I think they can definitely say, look, you need to speed up. I just don't know if they're going to actually get a code violation for it. It's a good question. I have to check the rules later.
And the other thing, I don't know if it was with you, I was discussing this yesterday, Simon, but I wish they'd bring in length of time, yeah, for the second service. To me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think they will. It's something they have tried in the UTS competition, the Patrick Mouratoglou event, where it's an exhibition, but they have very short time between serves, and now they have even less between second serves. I think it's got to be done. I mean, I was talking to a coach the other day who's saying that sometimes, because he's tracking matches on the screen and you can just stop it and you can go from point to point, and sometimes you can see it's 20 seconds sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. They need to deal with that. We know we've got to speed things up. Make sure this wonderful sport remains relevant with a new, younger generation who perhaps lack the patience of the past. This first serve from Andreeva, who's lost the first point of this third game. Backhand reply now from Paolini, mid-court ball. It's hammered inside out. I'm very wary now not to say the off forehand again, which could lead to further pregnant pauses. Mid-court ball once again. Double-hander from Paolini. She was going back across to the backhand wing of Andreeva, and it leads to another error and potential disaster in a sporting context for Andreeva if she was to go a breakdown early in this second set. Having lost the first by 6-3, it will start to be a long way back, a lengthy haul up the face of the mountain.
Taking a little bit of extra time, which is sensible.
And looking to serve out wide to the right-hander's forehand, but you heard the call. It was into the tram lines. And the second serve is into the net. That is the first double fault of the contest. And it comes at a most inopportune moment for the 17-year-old because now she faces three break points.
She just took a ball from the ball boy and just walloped it into the net instead. Gotta be careful with smacking the ball around. Oh. Andreeva's come close before.
Yeah.
Smacking the ball into the stands.
Yes. You have to be so aware of that. Because, of course, if in a moment of anger you flick a ball away and it hits somebody, you're out. Oh, she was nearly out of this game. That second serve must have been right on the line. The return is long. So Andreeva is clinging on by her fingertips in this particular game.
Julia says you can definitely get a time violation while returning, but your behaviour has to be pretty egregious to get it. I was at Siegerman v. Goff at the US Open last year, and Siegerman was stalling on return a lot. She eventually did get a time violation, leading to many cheers. Well, I bet it did. That's good to know.
Oh, I think I might sneeze in a moment. Andreeva with a drop shot. Paolini's going to get there. Andreeva reads it and angles a beautiful, cute little backhand volley into the open court to win a point after a nice little exchange at the net.
She's wiping her nose as well, Andreeva. But that was a really nice hand. She's got good volleys, good sort of feel at the net as Andreeva just played the backhand volley right across Paolini, who I don't think expected it to be quite that good. She's living dangerously. That's a really great second serve and a stunning volley to save these break points.
Yeah, still another one to deal with. That first serve is long by quite a distance, so Paolini, she starts to come forward for her return position and then backs off again and gets into a position to play an inside-out forehand, which leads to a really poor +1 error into the net. Andreeva is broken. She looked up at her box. She puts her hand up onto her head. That was a nothing shot, but could have very significant consequences.
Just banged her racket down by her bench as well. It was actually sort of, I think sometimes when she's probably a bit nervous and a bit tight because that return, she had time to run around it and hit a forehand, but she sort of waited for it and then the ball took a little bit of an odd bounce and she missed the backhand, and that's a sort of sign that you're not moving and thinking as well as you might be.
Well, Alison Hughes is going to be angry because she's had to come down off her chair again, this time not because of Jasmine Paolini's curiosity over a line call, but I think something has gone wrong with the camera.
Oh, no.
Andy Murray won't be surprised about that. So a gentleman appeared from nowhere and started fiddling around with wires on the Alison's back, and she's not looking entirely comfortable.
Well, I was going to say, those chairs, they're very well built and everything, but they're quite sort of precarious.
Yeah.
Quite high up.
Yeah. I mean, I've asked this, I think, most people. Have you ever seen an umpire fall out of the chair, primarily when they're coming down to have a look at a mark?
I've seen them slip on the stairs going up it.
Right.
I mean, it's obviously hilarious. But it could be quite painful.
It could be dangerous.
Yeah.
I know it's very childish of me, but I always kind of hope I'm going to see it happen.
Well, if they keep getting her down to have a look at marks, that'll increase the chances.
Yeah. So it's Paolini with the break, setting the break up. She's in a dream world, but she has to stay in the present, and she mishits that forehand that balloons out of the court.
Fischel says, I think there's a difference between inside-out forehand and offside forehand. Inside-out forehand was kind of introduced by Steffi Graf. Well, I think before that, for her, Fischel, there were plenty of people who played a sort of cut forehand, almost with slice.
Well, we had a succession of forehands, however you'd like to describe them, at the start of this rally. It ends, though, with the backhand down the line going wide off Andreeva's racket.
Yeah, still missing too much. Maybe going for the big shot too soon.
Whatever happens, Andreeva will climb to 23 in the world. If she does lose today, she'll be up to 16. She makes the final and finishes as a runner-up. She puts that forehand return into the net. And should she get to the final and beat Iga Świątek, she would be 14 in the world. And remember that this time last year, she had to get in as a qualifier, made it through to the third round.
Feels like she's boiling up a little bit. She's got to be careful, try and stay calm.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
She's only 17.
I know. No one's going to blame her, but if she's to have a chance, she's got to keep her head here, because she'll know then that Paolini is bound to get nervous as she gets close to a maiden Grand Slam final. She may be 28, but this is uncharted territory for her as well. Backhand to backhand, good striking from both players. And now forehand to forehand, shorter ball. Paolini goes deep, slice on the forehand from Andreeva. A lot of slice on the backhand from Paolini, having to stretch across now on her backhand side. That's better from Andreeva. She forces the error, showed more patience, and got the just reward.
She's really trying to keep herself calm, but that was exactly that. It was really well played, especially the short slice. It wasn't a drop shot, but it was just a slice that made Paolini stop what she was doing, slice the ball, and then Andreeva was able to attack down the line. So, yeah, she's thinking smartly, which is a good sign. Neil Skupski out there watching.
Neil, who was runner-up in the mixed doubles earlier today with Desiree Kravchuk, which was good news, obviously, for the French. Well done to Edouard Roger-Vasselin at the age of 40.
Yeah.
Grand Slam champion. Miss hit return long from Andreeva. With, is it Laura Sigmund?
Laura Sigmund,
that we just mentioned.
Yeah. You played really well. Probably the best player on the court.
I saw Skupski and Kravchuk save a match point.
Yeah.
Deep in the second set. I was doing a bit of work. Research, of course, Simon. Looked up about 3 minutes later and the presentation had already started, so those last two games must have been fairly quick.
Well, they were quick, but it's just the nature of mixed doubles, isn't it, with sudden death juice and stuff. It goes quickly.
And I hasten to add, I was listening to a lot of your commentary, but because it's a little bit out of sync, I eventually had to turn you down.
Yeah,
nothing personal.
It's understandable.
It's another hole for Paolini, another very unconvincing rally from Andreeva's point of view, which ended with a nothing sort of backhand that just drifted into the sidelines. So, just past the hour mark, it's an hour and a minute, to be precise, since they started this second semi-final, and it's all Paolini at the moment. She won the first set 6-3, and here's a disconsolate 17-year-old about to serve at 1-3 in the second.
Yeah, simply, she just needs to stop the errors. It's not as easy as that, though, unfortunately.
There is still time. backhand reply from Paolini onto the forehand. Oh, she's trying to go down the line, but it's another error, unfortunately, off the forehand wing to add to this unhealthy total. She's now up to 24 unforced errors.
Yeah, it's too many. That's six games worth.
Yeah, just the nine for Paolini, and one winner more than her Italian opponent. That first serve is long, so nothing really is working.
When you mentioned the unforced error stat and stuff, but there is definitely a school of thought that it should be got rid of, but it's an indication that she's making errors that she shouldn't.
Yes. Well, she's played a lovely little drop shot that Paolini's read, but no panic there from Andreeva. She held her ground as Paolini drop-shotted the drop shot. Andreeva just played a neat little volley into the open court. Not the first time she's done that.
No, and a little close-up of Conchita Martinez in the stands. It must be great having a coach like her, like Juan Carlos Ferrero, someone who looks just so calm when they're watching. They know what you're capable of. It's just a case of doing it. They're not getting too anxious or angry or anything like that. They're not going to be frustrated or annoyed if you lose. They just want you to do your best.
Well, if Andreeva wins now, she'll become only the second woman in the Open era to win a Roland Garros quarterfinal and semi-final from a set down. Only the second. I'll tell you who the other one was in just a moment. Short ball for Paolini, and she hammers it away. It's never easy for her because even a ball that's not rising too far off the ground presents a bit of a challenge for her, but she got up really well and she hammered the ball.
Yeah, she leapt up in the air to hit that. Good technique. I think often, this is a very big generalisation, but players who are on the shorter side have to have absolutely sound technique because otherwise they're just going to get overpowered.
Yeah, totally. Well, that's definitely caught the line. And, oh, dear, then Andreeva comes in and she had plenty of time really to play a plus one down the line, but she overhit it. It's gone long. It's another error. It's more break points for Paolini, and this for a double break and surely for a place in the Roland Garros final.
Yeah, she got the ball she wanted off a good serve, and it's that kind of miss that she's been making too often.
The only woman in the Open era to come from a set down in the quarters and semis of Roland Garros is Maria Sharapova. That was in 2014. So, one Russian has done it. Can another? Don't think so at the moment, but I'm prepared to be corrected. But, dear oh dear, another messy rally, I would have to say, ends with a backhand sailing long off the Andreeva racket, and as the sun comes out, so Paolini sits down, 4-1 up and serving.
I think, not surprising, the Andreeva is fighting her emotions. It doesn't look like tears are too far away, but she's, you know, it's a first semi-final. She was only 17 less than 2 months ago. It's a lot to deal with, the emotions in a match like this. What she's got to do now is focus and remind herself that Paolini's not been here either, and that she also could get tight. That's her best bet right now.
And it's worth stressing as well, I have mentioned this fact, but only two Italian women have reached the Roland Garros final. That's not just in the Open era, by the way. That is all time. Schiavone on two occasions, 2010 when she was the champion, and 2011, and Sara Errani, who was the runner-up in 2012. So this is huge for Italian tennis. I mean, they've got the real possibility now of having direct representation in both the men's and the women's singles final.
Yeah, it's an amazing turn of events for Italian tennis. I think it was about 6-7 years ago the Italian Federation decided that they really needed to invest in tennis. So they started to build more and more of the sort of futures tournaments and challenger events, and became sort of grew the sport from below to try and get as many top players as they could. It's working.
Yeah, and I have to say it's great for the sport, because if you're ever lucky enough to go to the Foro Italico, the support that the crowd generates there is fantastic. Support here for Andreeva, because she's clubbed a forehand winner down the line to take the first point of the sixth game of this second set on the Paolini serve. Just a little bit of hope for her. Couple more stats that signify the importance of winning the first set by the way. Świątek's win means that 16 of the last 17 Roland Garros women's singles semi-finals have been won by the player who wins the opening set. And I heard another extraordinary statistic relating to Świątek during that first semi-final, as Andreeva goes across court but misses and then looks down, stands stock still. I believe that having... I think that Świątek is something like 72-1, having won the first set. And I'm now... I heard either Eleanor...
In Grand Slams?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. And if Max is listening, he's our stats guy, who the one player was that was able to come back against her. But, I mean, that is terrifying as well. Yeah. Forehand into the net from Paolini. Talk about being a good front runner. I mean, she's just an unstoppable front runner.
Yeah, I mean, she is a real, incredibly good front runner, because she sort of bullies her opponents off the court, just blasts them away. Yeah, it's a good question. I'm trying to think off the top of my head when she... Oh, she loses to Elise Cornet at Wimbledon in three sets, having won the first, maybe.
Possibly. That's an ace from Paolini.
Can I look that up?
It's her first ace of the contest, and it takes her to 30 all. I don't think it was Cornet, but
maybe not.
Oh, I'm getting old. It was only an hour and a half or so ago that I was listening.
That was straight sets, actually, that one.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Cornet. Off backhand return. Now the forehand to the backhand side of Paolini. She's there again. Not having to move too much. Both players being relatively cautious in this particular rally. Who's going to make the first move? Paolini just angles the ball further across towards the backhand, but she strays long and, okay, what's to be done? But here, little opportunity for Andreeva. It's another chance to get a break. She's had plenty of them and failed dismally thus far.
Standing right up against the back fence just while adjusting her strings, listening to Conchita Martinez. Sensible.
Paolini's service to the backhand, cross court return with real power on the backhand from Paolini, who now plays the drop shot. Andreeva gets to it, but Paolini's there to cover it and put the forehand volley into the open court. She's doing everything right.
Yeah, she is. That was a very good choice of drop shot, and even though Andreeva got there, she knew she would be able to cut off the volley. That's the thing about the drop shot. You don't have to win it on the drop shot. You just have to set the point up for the way you want it to be played.
Andreeva is now 0-6 on break points.
Yeah, tells a story, doesn't it?
4-1 juice, and that return, well, it was awkward, but the ball's in play, so they'll continue. Paolini's there. She's guiding a ball onto the backhand wing of Andreeva, who gets a shorter angle to the Paolini backhand, and Andreeva goes down the line. Paolini covers that. Cross-court onto the forehand, and the slice on that wing from Andreeva's into the net, and she's berating herself again.
Yeah, that was a bad choice of shot. She was trying a drop shot from on the slide in the forehand corner. Very unlikely to make it.
Ah, I've got clarification of that stat. Mm-hmm. This is a record on clay, not at slams. On clay, okay. She is 73-1.
Wow.
When winning the first set. The one defeat.
Oh.
Come to in a moment.
Lizzie's guessed at it.
Let's see if in a moment Lizzie's got it right. Forehand from lofted forehand is long. Oh dear, oh dear. That wing, that forehand wing, has really let Mira Andreeva down today. And it's another game to Paolini. And she only needs one more to book her place in Saturday's showpiece.
Lizzie's guessing it. Karolina Muchová.
Lizzie, you're a genius.
Okay.
It was Karolina Muchová in Prague in 2019. Thanks to the Earl of Barnes, Max Wadsworth, our statistician. I slightly misled you by saying it was on all surfaces. That's the record on clay. 73-1 when Świątek wins the first set. That is absolutely ridiculous.
Yep, that's totally dominant. Whoever gets through today is going to have a tough job, to say the least.
Do you think they, you know, if they lose the first set, they just go and shake hands? Well, here's Andreeva serving to stay in the match. 1-5. Second serve. Backhand is flat on the return from Paolini, who, okay, we were thinking from Andreeva's point of view that she would hope Paolini might just stutter as she gets near to the winning line, but there's no sign of that at the moment. She's making room for herself with the inside-in forehand and then watches as Andreeva goes long again. Paoletti going about her business, looking efficient, cool, totally in control of the situation. You wouldn't guess that she was now just 3 points away from booking her place in the final of the French Open.
Yeah, she's just been too consistent, too sensible, too smart, hitting the ball great. She's taken her chances, whereas Andreeva has not. She's taken 6 of 6 break points. That tells you everything.
Well, the sun's come out again, but it's not really shining on Andreeva at the moment, who comes in and is passed. Bullet-like backhand from Paolini.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest approach, a bit more of a bluff than anything else.
Yeah, she's gone, I'm afraid.
Looks that way.
Standing at the back of the court now, facing away from Paolini, having a look at the ball, wishing that she could start this day again.
Oh, she's played an opponent who's been too solid for her.
The good news for her is that she's only 17 years of age. She should have plenty more opportunities like this. Definitely. Second service to the forehand. It was a shortish serve as well. Paolini happy just to get the point started again. Going cross court with a fizzing forehand. Now she's got a shorter ball. She's gone down the line. It's a clean winner. And it brings up match points.
Too good. Too good. Beautiful forehand, good movement to get there. Could have been awkward, it was low down. But just like she's been really all the way through the match, too consistent, too solid, too calm.
Three match points on the Andreeva serve. The first of them is to the forehand of Paolini. Backhand with a short angle from Andreeva. She winds up a big forehand. Paolini's there to cover that cross court. Another deep forehand from Andreeva. Now slicing, shortish ball. This could be it for Paolini. This is it for Jasmin Paolini. The pocket rocket powers through to her first Grand Slam final at the age of 28. Wasn't to be for the talented teenager. She's done brilliantly to get this far. She couldn't find the right game today.
Merci d'accueillir Zaya Ziouani, qui va diriger l'orchestre. Merci d'applaudir une nouvelle fois Divertimento, conduit par le chef d'orchestre Zaya Ziouani. Cinquante-deux musiciennes et musiciens dans l'orchestre, 10 danseurs que vous pouvez remercier également.
What a wonderful way to set the stage for the women's singles final. You are listening to Radio Roland Garros. Stefan, Sophie,
thanks again to the
Marcus,
52 musicians
and
10 dancers.
Moray. There you go. That's giving you the numbers
for
that you had out.
Opening ceremony.
It was a lovely opening ceremony, and it was the fireworks. I think we were slightly concerned as to what they were because they were happening above us. But the stage is set beautifully, Marcus, for today's main event.
It most certainly is. The French know how to put on a show, don't they? It's scary, those fireworks, just for a moment. We could hear them, we couldn't see them. But we're all set. Beautiful sunny day. On paper, of course, we've got what's expected to be quite a one-sided final. I don't wish to write Jasmine Paolini off. I just think, Sophie, it's impossible really to predict how a 28-year-old competing in her first Grand Slam semi-final will fare against a woman who can do no wrong on a clay court.
I have to agree with you. There's no doubt that the chances for Paolini are very slim. But then again, it's her first time, so it's either going to be a quick one. She's going to fold, and I think Świątek is going to go just full Świątek that we've seen play. Or because of a new player, somebody that Świątek doesn't know as well, it might have a little bit of an impact, but it's so slim. And let's not forget that she was here playing in the semifinal yesterday in doubles. She has played, I think, 17 hours on court. I think I counted. I have it in my notes. I'll talk about it later. And it was very hot yesterday. It was a very long three-setter, Paolini. So she's coming from yesterday playing when Świątek had her feet up and was recovering to play today. Very different, obviously. Phil, you're going to have to be so fit to beat somebody like Świątek on her turf. And playing that many hours, has a component to
it. Okay, so let's put your coaching hat on and let's devise a game plan. I'm not going to say it's going to work, but a game plan for Jasmine Paolini against Iga Świątek.
I think for me, she has to mix up a lot of things. She's got to use the drop shot. She's got to be aggressive as soon as she has any kind of possibility. Second serve, try to take that early. Not easy because the kick is going to go over her head. She's one of the shortest, smallest player on tour. She's very quick. But if you know, even the kick of Świątek, which kicks pretty high, if she doesn't move in the court, it's going to be difficult, I think, for her to respond. So one, take the second serve early. Don't let that ball kick over your shoulder. Two, so you can be aggressive. Two, use the drop shot. Make her move forward even though she's quick and change a little bit the rhythm and go to the forehand if you can of Świątek deep with some topspin. That's where Świątek could have a little bit of a slight, itch.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good to execute. That is obviously going to be a mighty challenge. I'll just come up with a couple of stats just to remind you that Iga Świątek has won 34 of her first 36 matches at Roland Garros. That equals the record of Chris Evert and Monica Seles. And only twice in the Open era have players outside the top 10 been able to beat a number one seed in a slam final. Jennifer Capriati did it against Martina Hingis in Australia back in 2001. Venus Williams did it against the lady I just came up in the lift with, actually, Lindsay Davenport at Wimbledon in 2005. History is against her. Świątek's form is against her. I know she faced a match point against Naomi Osaka, but she's only lost 14 games since then. And by the way, 14 players have won a slam after saving a match point. I'm pretty certain she's going to make that list go up to 15 today.
In terms of the height of Jasmine Paolini, she is 5'4", mm-hmm. A little pocket rocket up against the 5'9" of Iga Świątek. What is it, for people listening, what is it that makes Iga Świątek extra dangerous and extra special on the clay. What is it about the weapons in her armory that just takes her game to the next level on this surface?
Number one, the movement. Okay, a movement not only on clay, but especially on clay. She is moving so well and sliding so well. She's so comfortable on it. So, and if you watch, if you are able to watch at home and listen to us, of course, when she gets to a ball and she is late on a ball, she goes with an open stance on each side, forehand and backhand, and then she pushes out of the outside foot to come back. A lot of players will lose even more yards, more meters to come back. So the movement is key. Second, she has a forehand that has a lot more topspin than her backhand, so now you have a change of spin. You have a ball that kicks a little bit on the clay, especially today. It's a little drier, you know, it's warmer, so that ball is going to go a little bit, just like, you know, not obviously the forehand of Nadal, but when Nadal was playing when the circumstances were hot, his ball was kicking so high with the topspin. So not that high, but still. And then she has a flat backhand. So now all of a sudden you're hitting a ball that sometimes kicks above your shoulders, and then a ball that comes to your belly button. So you have to adjust. And she, I mean, again, she is the fastest player with Coco Gauff on court. The way that her explosiveness is on the first step is critical for her to get to the ball. The serve could be a little bit of a weakness on the second serve. She has changed the first serve. She has changed her technique, which I think is helping her and getting better and better from tournament to tournaments. So those are the components to me. And let's not forget the mental toughness. I mean, you don't come back from match point against Osaka. When she was in that match in the third set, she started believing and saying, there's no way I can lose this match, when Osaka was up 30-15, has a short ball to her forehand, put away, misses that ball. It could have been two match points at 5-3, Osaka serving. That's when Iga's just face and demeanor changed. It felt to me, it said, you know what? She just missed a huge opportunity here. I'm in every single point. And that mental toughness is going to be difficult as well.
Just seeing some shots of Jasmine Paolini, and this was a little bit earlier in the gym with her coach Renzo Ferlan, and that big smile on her face. I mean, what a weekend. The singles finals day, the doubles final with Sara Errani tomorrow. She was the most improved player on the WTA Tour last year. She won, if you look at the list of WTA 1000 winners, they're the names you'd expect. And there is, alongside Dubai, Jasmine Paolini. And she said, didn't she? She didn't dream of becoming a Grand Slam champion. And she didn't dream of being world number one. She dreamt of being a professional tennis player.
Yeah, and that's great. I think, be realistic. I mean, of course, you can have your dreams, and dreams do sometimes come true, but start with a realistic footing and then move ever upwards. And it's interesting you mentioned Sara Errani. She's going to have been invaluable over the past day or two because, of course, she made it to a Roland Garros final back in 2012 now. What is that, 40 years ago? I don't know where the years go. I'm interested to ask Sophie one question. Watching Paolini, as you just mentioned, we saw her in the gym. She's always got that smile on her face. She seems to genuinely be enjoying herself. But is it a cliche to say to a player ahead of an event like this, just go out and have fun? Or is that actually quite important as well?
I think it's not a cliche. I think it doesn't matter who you're playing and who's playing. I think if I had to coach anyone, I would say the first thing you have to do is have fun, because you can't perform well if you're not having fun. It's not the other way around. You don't perform well, you have fun. And to me, it's, you have fun. Of course, it's, you know, it's big, it's huge, it's something you want so badly. But, you know, talking about Paolini, one thing that she was saying, she said, you know, before Dubai and before I started to play better and better, I never really believed. I thought it would be a miracle for me to win against a top 10 player. Now I feel like I belong. And that is, you know, a huge mentality that changed everything for her. She really felt like she was part of those players, that she could compete with them day in and day out. And she didn't think it was a miracle anymore.
No.
So it's beautiful to watch. And she's, you know, not the youngest player. To see a player, like, you know, growing into her game a little bit older, that's giving, obviously, in the mind of players who are in 24, 25 years old, saying, hey, you know what? Time is time. And yeah, it might take time, but you might see some players, you know, developing a little bit later in their career.
That victory against Elena Rybakina in the quarterfinals was her third victory against top five opposition. Remind me, who tipped Rybakina to win this event?
Now, just a little word that Elena Rybakina had been suffering greatly. She had to withdraw from Rome where she was defending champion. Remember, she missed Indian Wells as well.
She
hadn't played.
So why did you pick her?
Lolita, because something that Jasmine Paolini can't do, she cannot hit through Iga Świątek. And they are the players that Iga Świątek has trouble with, the ones that can hit through her. And Jasmine Paolini, as we've just talked to, is going to have